I'm 14 years old.
And short for your age.
That's true.
Hey everybody, welcome to the A Dime Bad Podcast. I'm Tyler Wilkinson. We are joined by Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
And Peter Bard.
Hey.
Long time no see. And Megan Bard.
Too long.
Hello.
And actual bear, Kevin Meacham. Hello. So I guess full disclosure, we actually did record a podcast like 2 weeks ago, and then I did not have time to edit it. And in the meantime, we talked a lot about...
Discovered that the football team was terrible.
I guess it was the Virginia game, and we spent like 20 minutes talking about how UConn could win, and then they lost by 80. So that was a good time. So you will never hear that podcast.
I believe it'll actually be in the deleted scenes when we release our season DVD.
They'll use it in the documentary.
We also predicted that the USF game would absolutely 100% be rescheduled, and like 5 minutes later it was. I mean, we were totally accurate. It happened the right way.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yep.
When, everything that we said happened.
How it was not going to be rescheduled at all. We did not talk about that.
So the big story that's broken since the last time we talked is the big FBI scandal encompassing college basketball that it extends to shoe companies and recruits and assistant coaches and people possibly going to prison. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Rick Pitino has basically lost his job, as has Louisville.
That's really cool.
AD. Megan, you're our resident lawyer. Can you sort of walk us through what is the legal, you know, case being presented by the feds?
So this is kind of your standard corruption case where there's bribery involved. Because essentially what was happening is the shoe companies were using like assistant coaches to, or the teams were using Adidas to funnel money to recruits, but like through back channels. So the actual indictments are for things like wire fraud and money laundering, but there's also bribery involved. It's your standard federal corruption case. And this is the New York federal U.S. Attorney's Office, and this is what they do.
Sounds like how they took down Al Capone.
I mean, kind of, but this is more like going after the mob kind of thing. Like,
it's exactly like going after the mob. The NCAA is the mob.
The people who are most famous for prosecuting corruption cases are the New York U.S. Attorney's Office. Like, this is what they do. This is the thing they are the very best in the world at, and it's. These guys are screwed. Like, they're screwed. And because I know it does sort of sound like we've criminalized amateurism, and to a degree that's true. But the reality is that, you know, when you're funneling money to people and it's bribing people, then generally speaking.
Well, for kickbacks too, right?
Kickbacks, yeah. I mean, there was giving money to assistant coaches to send them to, you know, agents, to the shoe companies, to whatever. Like, everybody was, it's everything we already knew. That everybody was getting paid under the table, and when we saw certain recruits going to certain schools that don't have a history of great basketball programs but do have a shitload of football money, it's exactly what we all thought was going on. And Adidas,
Diamond Stone, yeah,
yeah. Or, I mean, listen, it's something we've seen a lot of. We've seen a lot of, and I wouldn't be surprised if people go to jail. I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out that they're starting with the little fish, and you're going to see more indictments later, because that is often how these cases go. But when you've got a federal indictment, it means they got you.
It sort of sounds like from the other legal perspective, yeah, play the Law and Order theme. From the other
in the world of college athletics
perspectives, that like this sort of just feels like the first shoe to drop, and the reason that it sort of seems like low-level assistants are being brought up is that they intend to just flip them up the ladder until big fish, like up to more coaches and university presidents, start getting entangled in it. Does that seem right?
That is very often how these types of widespread corruption cases, they do a lot of public corruption cases as well. Anybody you can think of who's been brought down for public corruption in probably the last 20 years.
So like half of New York state government.
Basically, yes. All of those.
Do you think they'll be able to get to New York? you think they'll be able to get to university presidents? Like, I feel like, yeah, you'd be able to get to the head coach. You might be able to get to the AD.
I think
the university presidents are always going to have deniability on shit like this.
It's possible. You'd have to have some pretty serious evidence. There'd have to be like emails or something.
Right.
Where do send that student $100,000 kind of thing.
Well, like, you remember in Blue Chips when, who was it? Bob Cousy was like, I don't want to fucking know what's going on. Don't tell me anything. Like, I feel like at the very least it's that.
Probably.
Yeah. I feel like but that's what a lot of head coaches do as well.
But they're saying now Patino coach number two? Is that what it appears to be?
You can't be as dirty as Patino by accident. This whole thing is like, oh, I didn't know any of this shit. Well, then what are you fucking doing? Are you that old and like, does he have dementia? Like, what the fuck are we talking about here?
I loved the tweet that said, Rick Pitino is the most important person in the world who knows absolutely nothing.
Actually, that
I can think of one other, but
yeah.
Jim Boeheim, right?
Jim Boeheim.
Exactly.
So let me ask
Jim Boeheim knows one thing, and that's how his boogers taste.
Can't deny it. Nobody could deny that.
Nope.
So let me ask you this, because what you touched on something, Megan, which was sort of the Kremlinization of the amateurism model. So thought that's been kicking around in my head that I've been meaning to write that I absolutely will never do it, so we might as well talk about it now, is if the consequence for these actions all of a sudden extends to, like, you're going to fucking prison, is that enough to sort of get these big moneyed programs to start reconsidering the compensation packages, or especially things like sponsorships and likeness deals? Aren't players getting paid a better end result than you going to jail?
I mean, I certainly think so. It would make sense. I think the initial response is just going to be like, everybody chills out for a minute and stops like directly using shoe company money to pay kids. But it would seem like that is the answer, because obviously there's money. Obviously there's money to pay the kids, because some of these kids are getting paid. Someone's willing to give them $100,000 to go to college. So if the money exists, it just seems like it would make a lot more sense to do the whole thing above board instead of laundering money and committing wire fraud and then going to a federal prison in upstate New York for, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, just on the point you made about there being money to pay a recruit $100,000, I think it's important to remember that this was Brian Bowen who got $100,000. Brian Bowen, who is like a top 25 recruit, definitely very good, like a borderline five-star guy. He's not a top five recruit. So if the going rate for him is $100,000, what is it for DeAndre Ayton or Muhammad Bamba or any of these other top five guys?
Like, Waters.
I'm saying that if it's happening with Bowen, it's happening with higher profile players too.
So I added this question too as another thought. You hear this scandal and your two thoughts turn to Kentucky and Duke, who are pulling the most of these top level recruits. If you are an athlete and you're sort of being recruited by hypothetically LSU, maybe Miami, and they're floating these backroom deals, but you can just go to Kentucky and take 3 months worth of classes and then you're in the lottery the next year. You know what I mean? Like, does Kentucky need to do this? Does Duke need to do this? Or are we seeing it more at the schools that are trying to bump their way up to compete with those schools?
I've actually had that exact same thought too, because especially if you're a one and done, like if you're really one of those top 10 kids who is only going to play 1 year of college, your best bet is to go to Kentucky, to go to Duke, to play for one of those schools where you're probably going to end up playing well into March. You're going to, have John Calipari bringing in NBA people. Like, that's probably more valuable to you, and they probably don't need it. But, yeah, the schools that don't have a basketball tradition who are literally having to bribe kids to come to play basketball for them. That's I think, if you think about where some of these schools are, like, if you actually look at the recruiting, it seems pretty obvious, like, where it's happening.
Here's my thing about that, though, is that – they're not just the best recruiting schools. They are blowing everyone out of the water. And they just decide which guys they want, and they get them. And none of those guys are the guys taking money. None of them. And there's people around these programs, around the Kentucky program, around the Duke program, who would love to spend their money to bring in top recruits to their school that they're a fan of. These people are nutcases with too much money. There's no reason that what's happening in Alabama isn't already happening at Kentucky. And it's not like the guy in charge of that program has earned the benefit of the doubt. So I have no reason to believe that Kentucky's not as dirty as everybody else.
I mean, I wouldn't be like, I'm sure there are bag men everywhere. I do doubt that there's bag men in
everywhere except
UConn. I think there's a difference
if you're in the SEC, you got the bag.
Yeah.
I think there is a difference, I have to say, between the schools, like some guy making a backroom deal who is on the coaching staff versus like the guy who owns the car dealership giving the kid a loaner. Like, I do think those two things are different, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to learn anybody is cheating, though it would break my heart if it turned out UConn was. That would surprise the shit out of me, though.
I guess I just feel like what's really the distinction between making the agreement with the shoe company to give the kid $100,000 and knowing that the whatever in your city is going to give the kid $100,000 and that's why he's going to commit? I mean, is it really any less dirty that way?
I mean, one's illegal and one's not. I mean,
well, they're both illegal to some degree. One's illegal in one context, one in a different context.
I mean, it is. The difference is one is knowing about a thing and one is doing the thing. So, yeah.
And then there's, of course, hiring an AAU coach to come join your coaching staff or finding someone's uncle, you know, $100,000 a year job.
Not that that's ever happened, just hypothetically.
Hypothetically.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no doubt that Kentucky is probably paying players or having players get money, you know, while they're in school. But I think with the recruiting, it's just for them it's like a self-perpetuating cycle. Like they probably paid John Wall or something. And now they're just getting these top kids. So top kids want to come there to play with top kids. And, oh, you know, you'll stay there for 6 months and then you might get a car. I'm not sure. I don't know. I would be surprised if they were doing the same thing that like Alabama and Louisville and these other like try hard programs were.
It certainly seems like they wouldn't need to. Yeah. It certainly seems like they wouldn't need to resort to as illegal means.
We're assuming that because they get all the kids. We're like, well, they get all the kids. Of course they're going to always get all the kids. But what if the reason they're getting all the kids is because they were dirty first?
See, I don't think they could cover it up with the number of kids that they could get. Or that they get every year?
Well,
I
mean, we'll see how well they covered it up. If they don't get caught, oh, then maybe I'm wrong. But, like, give it another 6 months. We'll see what happens.
By the time this podcast is edited, we'll be wrong about all of it already.
Yeah.
Do any of us in this podcast think that UConn is paying recruits?
No.
Hey, UConn is not paying recruits.
I don't think UConn is paying recruits.
I actually... I was thinking about this earlier tonight, and I wanted to go back and look at some of the recruits UConn's gotten to see where they came from in terms of their AAU programs, just because we know that Louisville has that connection with Adidas, and maybe that's how they got Bowen, Maryland, Under Armour, Diamond Stone, that sort of thing. So I just went back to the start of the Kevin Ollie era, just so I could start somewhere. In that time, UConn has gotten 10 either 4 or 5-star recruits. Only one of them is a top 50 recruit who played for a Nike AAU program, and that's Alterique Gilbert. So, and, you know, if you're a high-profile school like UConn is, you're going to get Nike guys who are good. So I think there is no reason to believe that there is any sort of Nike connection at UConn that is sort of illegally or kind of against the rules getting guys here. Also, if that was the case, UConn would have better players.
And it's also not like it's not like Gilbert was a Diamond Stone situation
where he was,
you know, rumored heavily to UConn, but his hometown Wisconsin was in the mix, and then all of a sudden he happens to go to the Under Armour school. Alterique Gilbert was being trained by former UConn guard Robert Swain in Georgia. Ricky Moore knew him. You know, there was like a clear path for him, but it's these guys that all of a sudden pop out of nowhere and go to a school that you know has that financial reach that seems to come off the radar.
And then the other Nike guys that you kind of got, Kenton Facey and Terrence Samuel, were both four-star recruits. They both played for, or they're both from the New York area, so it makes sense that UConn would recruit there. Aquino, is that how you say his name?
Yep.
Just committed from the Oakland Soldiers, came out of nowhere because he wasn't all that highly ranked until Peach Jam this year. So he committed to UConn. Like, there's no...
UConn was in on him. They offered him back in May.
Yes, yes. But then, like, the other, like, Jalen Adams was an Adidas guy. Daniel Hamilton didn't play for a Nike AAU program. Neither did Vance Jackson. Like, he played for Dream Vision. So there's no, like, these are all Adidas guys. So there's no way Adidas isn't helping UConn out. UConn's not an Adidas school. So at least in that respect, there's no reason.
Maybe we should be.
Maybe we should be.
But no.
In that way, there's no reason to think that UConn is doing anything with its shoe company, with Nike, that would raise any eyebrows. Doesn't mean that nothing's going on there, but at least not with Nike.
And I guess anecdotally, like, we have heard from the sources close to the program where UConn seems frustrated because they think they're outworking other teams for recruits and the recruits are going elsewhere. And let's just say there's some suspicions about other programs coming from within UConn.
Yes. Although I think we should note that it would be nice if some of the current UConn players would watch what they post on social media a little bit more carefully.
Just a little bit.
Little bit.
The moral of the story is pay the players what they're worth. Let them go out and get their own endorsement deals. And then you don't have to go to prison.
Prison seems like a bad time. I'm just saying. It doesn't seem like a thing people should do. You can avoid it. You should.
So I just actually thought of a really good idea to save UConn Athletics.
Oh, great.
That would be for us to start a Patreon.
Okay.
Have people donate, and all of that money that we make will go to me, and I will be the bag man for the University of Connecticut. So hopefully by the time this is edited and posted, we'll have that set up. You could be one of, you know, you could be a $5 supporter. We'll give you a shout out on the podcast. If you give us $20 a month, we'll get the recruit that you help us pay off to shout you out on Twitter. We'll figure it out.
How much money do they have to give to be mentioned in the indictment?
$100,000.
All right.
Well, one side note before we move on. One of the things that kind of struck me about this whole thing is how low on the totem pole for Nike UConn must be. And how much our women's basketball team is carrying that apparel deal. Because, Nike is not sending us their best players if they're sending us their best players. But they clearly are paying us quite a bit of money. So
you mean Nike doesn't want to illegally sponsor college athletes that play Sunday at 4 p.m. on CBS Sports Network?
UConn's value to Nike is its women's basketball program. Though it should also be noted that Jim Calhoun's son is the CEO of Converse, which is a subsidiary to Nike. So there are connections there as well.
Plus Tor Watts.
What's Tor Watts doing?
I don't know, but he works for Nike. So does UConn alum Caroline Doty.
Doty does. Michael Auriemma.
So does Mike Auriemma. Oh,
he's gone.
All right. Well, We roll deep.
To give UConn a lot of money for, even if it is just for women's basketball, because I don't know if you guys know this, but women buy a fair amount of athletic wear.
What?
Do women like sports?
I don't know if you have heard about this, but women enjoy sports and dance.
Megan, I'm going to stop you right there.
Yes.
Do you like sports?
I have on occasion been known to partake of sports watching.
Okay. Then tell me who UConn beat in the second round of the 1986 NIT. Or 1988, sorry.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not a true fan.
Hashtag fake fan.
Louisiana Tech, a traditional women's basketball power, Megan. You should have known that.
I should have known that. I'm so ashamed of myself that I did not pass your gatekeeper test.
Frankly, having never played collegiate men's basketball, Megan, I don't know where you get the nerve to comment on this podcast. At some point, we need to offer context to this before people start taking it seriously.
As somebody who is 6'8" and played Division I men's basketball, I say you are not qualified to have this conversation.
I do enjoy getting quizzed. It's funny because it either goes
do you actually get quizzed?
Oh, I have been. Oh, yeah. Okay.
The dumbest question. Who plays quarterback for the Patriots?
It's either embarrassing or obvious. I did. This is a true story. I was at a bar and said to someone I was a Yankees fan, and there was a game on. He pointed to the TV and goes, "Do you know who that is?" It was Derek fucking Jeter. And I was like, "You mean the most famous baseball player in the last 2 decades? Like, did you seriously just ask me if I can identify Derek Jeter?" And he was like baffled that was offensive. But my favorite really is you know a lot about sports for a girl.
Oh yeah.
Said with like surprise, like, wow, you can talk about basketball and also have a vagina at the same time. It's fine.
We should talk about the actual team now.
We got two new players. We got two new players since we talked last time. I think the last we spoke that people heard about was right after we got Sid.
Right. So, yeah, since then we got James Aquino, point guard from Oakland, California region, and Lucas Kazunas, Lithuanian dude, big man.
Now I haven't been on the Boneyard in the last few days, but I would imagine they really like that commit.
Well, yes. I would imagine there's
the way to make that.
It's just something about him. He seems like a really scrappy kind of player.
Hardworking. I think he's a smart player.
Smart, high basketball really IQ.
He's very
high
basketball IQ.
Probably a good student as well.
I've heard he's like the next Justin Brown. That's from someone who's seen him play.
Hey, Justin Brown has a ring.
I would like Jake Boskel 2.0 if we could make that happen. He's supposed to have good hands. Justin Brown had terrible hands.
Yes, he did.
And feet.
Yes.
Most of his body parts are bad.
I'll say it's refreshing to see them just recruit a different kind of player.
You mean a white one?
Yeah.
I was thinking more like one over 6'9".
Like a large human. It's nice to see them get after like a large scratch.
Actual center.
Yeah.
Like at this point, I'm relatively confident that one of the five absolutely identical players on the roster will turn out to be fine. But it'd be nice to have like another option.
Well, UConn has now more scholarship players than it has scholarships to hand out for next year's team. So they are certainly counting on either at least one of those five players not working out or someone to go pro.
Yeah, I think they're expecting at least Larrier to go pro.
Yeah, because Larrier has pretty much set it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say unless he gets hurt, maybe even if he does get hurt, I don't know.
Or if he sucks because he hasn't played basketball in 2 years.
In the time that we saw him, he looked really fucking good last year.
Yeah, he looked like a player.
Yeah.
He's going to need to make that jump shot consistent.
Probably not going to happen. But he's a good enough athlete that he can get, he'll be able to score points.
Is this going to be a Daniel Hamilton situation where like he leaves a year too early and he would have been very helpful on next year's team?
Every year will be a Daniel Hamilton situation for the rest of time. That's what college basketball is going to be now. If you're lucky, it's one guy.
Well, as long as it's not like all Steve Enoch situations where the guy who's like, all right, but kind of useless transfers, and then the school that he goes to is immediately under investigation from the FBI.
Womp womp.
How much money do you think they paid Steve Enoch to commit to Louisville?
Honestly, I hope nothing.
I'm sure nothing.
Yes. Just make sure you're up at 12:30 a.m. Eastern time to put on CBS Sports Network and watch Vance Jackson in New Mexico.
Yeah, actually, speaking of New Mexico, that's a school I would not be surprised to hear had a little bit of that going on.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why?
I remember they used to pay guys in the 90s.
Yeah, true.
Remember when Kenny Thomas was there?
I was born in 2003.
That's right.
Mississippi State's on my possible list.
Every school.
Oh, Mississippi State's dirty. Oh, Mississippi State. Every yeah. SEC school is dirty.
Remember Auburn, when Malik Newman went to Mississippi State?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Cash that check and then immediately bounced to Kansas.
Florida, maybe not. Florida
might be clean.
Maybe.
Yeah, they don't really care about basketball.
So back on the sort of recruiting front, Jalen Carey, who was a top target earlier, finally made it official tonight. He's going to Syracuse. So that's done until Syracuse gets wrapped up in the FBI probe and he decommits.
Wouldn't be surprised.
It's going to be really...
We already had to decommit from Miami before that.
Apparently, we've already reached out to two of the Louisville decommits, including...
Anthony Simons.
Yes. So yes. UConn reached out to him and also the Jersey guy.
Yeah, I don't think UConn's really in on either of them, though, are they?
I don't know, but it's funny that they've reached out at the same time that they've oversigned their 18 class.
I will say...
They buy one.
No,
like,
I know.
They're going to lose more than one guy.
But I'll be very interested to see how big that pool of decommits grows as the FBI probe starts unfolding.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I would also say, even though Jalen Carey committed to Syracuse today, Carey dropped Miami as soon as that FBI thing hit. He might be available soon.
Presumably, he would know. He would have asked, maybe, if Syracuse.
What are they going to say?
Oh, yeah. Jim Boeheim definitely is going to be honest with that kid. That's definitely in his character. Yeah,
we're going to be fucked.
Jim Boeheim's final words as they're like hauling him
consistent
off to
with his character.
If they're hauling Jim Boeheim off to federal prison, his last words to the camera would be like, Jalen Carey is not a true point guard. Do not draft him.
If anyone is known to do what's best for his players, it's Jim Boeheim.
That'll be his plea deal.
And
yes, to admit that Jalen Carey.
He'll roll on every prospect he's ever recruited. He sucks.
Syracuse. I wouldn't be surprised if something comes up.
God, I hope so.
Me too. That's the one I want.
That would be the funniest.
It's not even the funniest. That's the one that, like, deep in my soul, like, I want that to happen to them.
Oh, I want Syracuse to get busted again and get the trifecta of seasons where he's been banned from the tournament. Yeah.
Say it's going to be interesting when all of the former Big East teams that are now in the ACC are like brought in down by federal probes and we're just out here playing Tulsa on a Thursday night.
Yeah, we get to have
it's cool guys
shit-eating grin about being a clean program while we're all, you know, in Tulsa on New Year's Eve. It's going to be great.
Yeah, sounds fun.
I hate you guys. I hate you guys so much.
To be fair, Pitt is doing a fine job without the FBI. So
so is BC.
Do we all wish that, as the famous Twitter account No Escalator said, UConn should have been cheating its balls off, like, in the last 10 years?
Honestly, yeah, we'd be in the ACC.
Yeah.
It really seems like there is no consequences. So, yes.
Well, I mean, maybe these guys are going to go to jail, though, now. Like, that's a consequence.
Yeah, but that's not
we're not going to jail.
I'm saying before that, in the interim, whatever happened with all these other schools that got them to the place that they got picked over UConn, whatever sort of illicit underground stratagem was being employed, yes, UConn should have done that.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I'm on my way home from work today. I was listening to the CBS college basketball podcast with Norlander and Gary Parrish, and they were talking about Arizona. They brought up the very good point that if you're Sean Miller right now and you were told that Arizona's punishment was going to be you go on probation, one player is ruled ineligible this year, and Miller gets like a 5-game suspension, would you take that? I would take all of that right now to be in the ACC without question.
I would take...
So yeah, UConn should have been cheating.
I would not play a game in the 2018 season.
Yes.
To put UConn in
I would
ACC
take a death
right
penalty
now.
If it meant on the other side, UConn's in the ACC.
I will let Glenn Miller go to prison for the rest of his life.
Would you take
that? Kai Ashton Langford immediately transfers to prison.
Would you take an above 500 record in exchange for Glenn Miller going to prison?
Honestly, maybe. If you could just lock it down at, like, you know, 17 and 13. Lock him up.
But like that's the key difference. Like Louisville's going to be fucked for a couple seasons, and then when they're off probation or whatever, they're going to have $30 million a year from the ACC.
Yeah, but what if the ACC kicks them out? It can happen.
Yeah. What if tomorrow I wake up and I'm 6'5"?
I'll make fun of you a little less.
That's the thing that is irking me about this is because, yeah, sure, Louisville's going to get rid of their Hall of Fame coach. They're going to lose their AD that, by all accounts, is doing a good job. But if there's no financial penalty attached to that, they can just hire...
Greg Marshall.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. Or David Benedict. You know, they could take whoever they want and pay them more than everyone else, and it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we talked about this a couple months ago after John Thompson was fired from Georgetown, is that if UConn was in that situation where it had to let Kevin Ollie go, there would be a lot of pressure on whoever that next hire was. Whereas if UConn was in the ACC or wherever, they could make a bad hire. They could have a few more shit years, and they're still going to be bringing in all that money, and they're still going to be UConn, and they're still going to have a chance to rebound in, you know, 2020 or whenever it is. Now in the AAC, that's not the case. And that's just that is what annoys me about every school that is in the Power Five and in this situation right now, is that no matter what the punishment is, they're still going to have all that money coming in, and they will still have a shot at rebuilding their program eventually. Whereas UConn, who is supposedly doing things the right way, is probably fucked.
NC State is also paying players.
Oh, no question.
I was just thinking if UConn ended up in the ACC and then made a bad coaching hire that sabotaged their program for a while, what would that look like? And I was thinking NC State probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like NC State just hired Keats, and maybe he's a great coach, and maybe NC State becomes really good. Like, that's totally feasible. I'm not saying it'll happen, but it could.
But the point is, even if you aren't good, if you're in the ACC and you need to go hire a coach, somebody good is going to leave a program they're winning at.
You can become
try and,
right.
Yeah,
you can buy success in the ACC.
Yes, UConn cannot do that.
No, unless you're buying the success of getting rid of Bob Diaco.
That was a success.
That was a great investment.
You know, I did hear a knock. Maybe it was faint, like the rap of a cane on the door. Let me go check. Oh, hello. Good evening, y'all.
This content is absolutely suited just to Peter in this exact moment.
It is I, David Benedict Cumberbatch. Greetings to the Dimeback crew.
Hello, David.
Hey, David.
How are you all on this fine evening?
Very well. Are you going to regale us with more tales from the J. Timothy's Tavern menu this evening?
Of course. I would not even think of coming here without doing it. I, of course, have it memorized, as I learned at Oxfordshire School, to memorize all things. And I would love to tell you about the New York strip steak that they have at J. Timothy's Tavern.
Please do.
It's a strip steak with fried onion straws, mashed potato, and vegetables. That's a real English meal. Don't let the New York part fool you. It's a very English meal. In fact, I think it might be from Old York, which, of course, is the land of my birth. It's, of course, obviously, the famous town that was taken over by the Vikings in the 9th century. And today it finds itself as the absolute hub of English industry and a place that I consider near and dear to my heart.
How much does this dish cost, David?
Oh, this dish cost just $27.95. That is barely half a ticket to Liverpool, that famous English team of my home country.
I gotta say, sounds pretty damn good.
The menu does say to please allow extra time if ordered medium well or well done.
David, I have a question for you. Is it possible that if the Dimeback team has a meetup at J. Timothy's that you'll make an appearance?
Well, that would be absolutely wonderful. Unfortunately, I do find myself traveling all the time, whether it be to my home in Yorkshire or to the field hockey game, I don't know.
Thank you, David, and thanks as always to J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut, for allowing us the use of their spokesman for the evening.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And buy football tickets.
Cheerio.
What do we think J. Timothy's opinion is of us?
It's unclear if they... Oh, wait, no, they've mentioned this before. They like it.
Yeah, they like the David Benedict Cumberbatch bit.
Oh, wait,
bit.
did I miss David Benedict Cumberbatch? Was he here?
I'm sorry.
Missed him.
I always miss him. This is awful.
We'll get you two together soon.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have, like, questions we should be answering? What's our...
Oh, yeah.
We didn't get a ton of good questions.
Oh, wow. What a shock. Our readers don't ask good questions.
We had a good mailbag last week. I thought we had a couple good questions. And we had some other good questions, including one about...
Yeah, our two good readers chipped in.
Yeah, including one about the FBI scandal that we basically just answered. All right. This is a question that was asked on September 13th by John Skinnell that I meant to answer at the time, and then we didn't, so I'm going to ask it right now. Where would UConn be right now if Ward Manuel was still the AD?
I think in the exact same place they are. I don't think it would have made any difference.
Who's the football coach?
Bob Diaco.
Yeah, that's the difference. Football would still be really painful to watch, and we wouldn't have Rhett Lashley, our genius.
I don't know.
It was his guy.
You don't get Lashley without Benedict. That's the only reason Lashley's here. So yeah, if
that's
you have four,
that's true. Okay.
There's no Lashley.
Maybe maybe they get somebody else though. Like
right.
Lashley's a goddamn genius though.
Maybe Jerry Kill.
I was gonna say. I guess what you're hoping in that case is that because Ward would feel ownership over Diaco,
Jerry Kill.
He might. Yeah, but Ward.
Yeah,
might
but
have
maybe
been
he
able
wouldn't have said
in.
No if it was Ward asking.
Right.
The guy who
right.
hired him.
And Ward might have done it a season earlier. The problems were relatively obvious, and Ward had been there long enough that he might have been able to force that change earlier. I guess that's the counter. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm just giving the counterpoint. Peter, did you watch the last game?
No.
One half of it was good. If you only watched the offense,
three quarters.
That's like how I play Madden. Like if I'm in a hurry, I just sim
the
through
offense
the defensive
is
plays.
Shocking good. It's shockingly good. Like I just read somewhere that Sheriff's is like the number four pass rater in the country. Like what?
But I love losing like this.
I got to be honest. If we're going to lose games.
This is way better.
Scoring a shitload of points is way better. It's a lot of fun to watch them score points. Actually.
You know what the difference is? UConn sucked last year. UConn sucks this year, but it's not a joke.
Yeah.
Like, people don't make fun of UConn's ineptitude like they did last year.
Well, they get behind multiple scores in the second half, but then they score a couple times and make you think they won't lose by 20 points. And then they lose by 20 points. But at least for that minute, it didn't seem like it.
I mean, I did not expect to see UConn tied to SMU at SMU in the third quarter. I was like, this isn't a thing I was expecting. I thought they, by halftime, game was going to be over. It was going to be a blowout. And the fact that they managed to hang with them as long as they did is pretty impressive, especially when you consider how many true freshmen are playing a lot of minutes for this team right now. Like, They're little baby football players, and they're doing so good.
Is that where we're at now, where we're like, hey, we hung with SMU for three quarters, so.
You know what, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Where I'm at right now, this is where I'm drawing my positivity, which is a rare thing with me in UConn sports these days. But like the offense has been so good. That's the word that works. Good.
It's actually good. It's good.
And the defense has been
satisfactory.
And the defense has been so impossibly bad.
Very bad. Extremely bad.
But, you know, if you gave me the choice of like, all right, you can have one of these products and we'll fix the other one, I have a lot more faith in Randy Edsall and UConn generally fixing defense than I do in them creating a new offense. Yes. Like, I feel like we've gotten really fortunate that the offensive part of the situation seems more or less complete and is only going to get better when they bring in better players.
Yeah. UConn's really struggling in the secondary. It's really struggling.
Trash.
Meacham, I have a question for you.
And special teams is shitting the bed. And like Edsall, I don't expect an Edsall team's to like have special teams be this much of a mess.
Well, mind you, this isn't exactly an Edsall team.
That's true.
Right. This is a Diaco team coached by Edsel.
But the, I guess my point is that is to underscore what Tyler was saying, that I have faith in his ability to like figure that shit out and like get these people to do what they're supposed to do on special teams. And they have to bring in some, they got to bring in some new in their secondary. Like that's.
And on the defensive line.
Yeah. And
a linebacker.
Yeah. As the resident.
Most of the defense needs to be replaced.
Meacham. What? Yep. What should we make of Billy Crocker?
He doesn't have the players for his system yet. I mean, clearly, like, you need really good linemen to. Right. That's where everything starts.
Well, can he adjust his system for the personnel that he has?
I think they brought him in here to run his thing. I don't know that. I don't know that they're going to go to four down linemen because it's not something that he's really coached.
So you kind of just kind of stuck with what they have now, and they have to recruit players to his system.
Pretty much. And I mean,
yeah, but also these guys could get better at it.
Yeah. The whole thing is you want to play the system you're going to play, and then, you know, you figure out who can play and who can, and then you bring in guys who can play those things. They're going to need to recruit a couple a nose tackle. They need some ends who can actually like not get blocked out all day. They need linebackers who can rush the passer. I like the Beavers kid, the freshman linebacker. I think he's going to be a good one. They just don't have enough yet.
I know this is weird, but I am finding it sort of heartening that the freshmen are taking more and more minutes, that they're actually proving to be the better players, which gives me hope for the future that, like, maybe some of these kids you would have wanted to redshirt, like, if your system was already functional and working, you might have redshirted them their freshman year, but they're actually playing serious minutes now, and that's certainly not ideal, but the fact that they're actually better than the people who were here is something that does seem to bode well for the future.
It's what happened last time he was here too, though. Every year we were starting a bunch of new freshmen, and then the next year we'd be like, those guys were shit. These guys are the guys.
So that's because Bob Diaco can't recruit.
That is true. If any of you like knows more about sports than I do, and you can correct me on this, go ahead. Well, I know you do. It's incredibly telling that how good your quarterback is a direct reflection on who and how good your coach and coordinators are. And Bryant Sheriff's comparing his numbers from last year to this year, because we know he's still not really a great cornerback, but he looks really fucking, his numbers look really fucking good this year under the Rhett Lashley offense and Randy Edsel compared to Bob Diaco of last year. Am I wrong?
You're 100% correct.
What I like to look back on is, if you look at this team right now and how this offense is functioning, imagine if Rhett Lashley had control of the offense 2 seasons ago when the defense was absolutely on fire with Luck and was pulling like 3 turnovers a game.
They would have won the AAC.
You had quarterback Ryan Sheriff. So you had running back Arkell Newsome. You had Noel Thomas, who's a better receiver than any of the guys that are running through the middle of the field right now. It just goes to show that timing is everything, but also,
you know, Bobby sucks.
The point that
I was trying to make on the Brian Sheriff's thing with the difference in head coaches is that Tom Brady is absolutely a system quarterback, not any good. Just because Belichick's great.
He's bad,
that's
the
only reason why Tom Brady looks any good.
We watched them try and run Arkell Newsome up the middle for 3 fucking years, and it took Lashley and Edsel all of like 2 games to figure out that actually maybe we should be throwing to him in the slot and like get him the ball in space instead of trying to run him up the middle, which he clearly can't fucking do.
And it was so frustrating because like the 2 times that we saw him actually like in his zone in the last couple of years, he was fucking great.
It didn't really take that long to figure out that he was not being used correctly. And it is very frustrating when you think about it. It's like, oh no, those people are just stupid. And
they are. Because, like, I'm no fucking coordinator. I don't know anything about football compared to what these guys know. I can watch what happens and say, do that thing that works.
Yeah.
I don't think the previous
and stop doing that thing that literally never works. Like, yeah.
I am capable of that.
The thing that's different about Lashley compared to the other offensive coordinators is that he understands how to build an offense.
Yeah.
Like what concepts work and what concepts you can build off of other concepts that work and counter and do everything. And like, you can see that. There are open receivers on every play. That's because he knows how to design pass plays.
Yes.
He knows how to utilize his weapons. That's why Newsom's catching passes and running the ball twice a game now.
When was the last time before this year that a UConn offense knew how to run a good pass play?
2009.
That's a long time ago.
It is.
That was before Russ was born.
I was in kindergarten.
Mitch, after the SMU game, what is your opinion on the offensive line at the moment?
I thought Saturday was their absolute worst game. I mean, Sheriff's got sacked 8 times. Not all that.
Yeah, they were dog shit.
They got pushed around.
Because that's the other thing is this offense is excelling while playing an unplayable line.
Yeah.
Protecting a quarterback made of mashed potatoes.
A lot of it is the backup center, because Crozier's out for the year. Dan Oak did not have a good game. He missed on a couple snaps, including a really costly one in the fourth quarter. And he really was a sieve blocking. There was a lot of pressure coming up the middle. So, you know, maybe they stick with him. Maybe they go to Vescheri, who was the center 2 years ago. I don't know. I mean, there's some hope on the line. I really like Pert.
I do too.
He is really good, and he's going to be really good before he leaves here. And, you know, a couple of the young guys. Vandermark looks like he could be a very, very good right tackle for them.
Tyler, I have a question for you.
Okay.
The last game you were at was that BYU game, right?
I believe so.
Beginning of the Yaku era. Knowing that UConn's, at least record-wise, will still be probably about where they were last year, are you any more likely to buy a ticket now that they're watchable?
Oh, yes. Like miles more likely. Yes. I've been saying this for a year. I do not want to go sit either in 90 degree heat or 30 degree cold and watch them not attempt a passing play in the second half. You know, because Bob Diaco did that.
That USF game was unbearable.
I went to the Towson loss and hated everything about it so much I didn't go back. And then I guess it was the year after BYU was the first game. Somehow I got sold the bill of goods. Like, this is the year. We're going to be much better. I went to
you
that
had me
game.
In the press box in that game. I was there.
That was bad. And I was really mad about that game because it was one of the, like, UConn specials where I'm like, oh, my God, BYU, it's going to be a good game. And I buy my, like, $50 ticket. And then by the time game day rolls around, they're like, anyone want a ticket for $1 and, like, 3 toothpicks?
Why the toothpicks?
The UConn administration love toothpicks. It's one of those things.
My closing thought on football to kind of tie in with what Tyler was saying is that, like, the first 4 games of this season, like, the team is bad. Let's not sugarcoat this. It's a bad team. It's one of the probably 20 worst players, but or 20 worst teams in the country. But they're bad in a way where you can, like, have hope still. Like, Diaco's first year, they were bad in a way that was just complete incompetence.
Yeah, right. This team gets a couple of turnovers. They could beat – they could win games.
Forced a turnover all year?
They have 2, I think.
Oh, okay.
I had to look that up, too, because I didn't believe it.
They're probably not going to win more than 3 games, but they have a chance to beat a team like a Temple or a Missouri or a Boston College. And, God, I hope it's Boston College.
We've absolutely reached the same point we were with the men's basketball last season when we basically knew the season was over on December 1st, but that Syracuse game was on the calendar. And I was like, just win that game. You're like, just give it to me. And that's where I'm at right now.
Like, they're not going to a bowl. They're probably not going to win more than 3 games. But, you know, you can see some good players coming up, and the offense is, you know, fun to watch at least.
Go get that BC game.
At least if they're going to lose, like, it's just because they have worse players. And that's fine. We know it's a long rebuild. And in a couple of years, hopefully, we'll have better players. I will say I'm looking at the advanced stats charts, and our highest win probability for the rest of the season is Tulsa, 40%. We are 40% to win that game.
Cool. What's our lowest?
Lowest is at UCF. We're 9%.
Okay, so you know what? That actually might be the most fun one.
That's going to get ugly, I think.
For them. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Dimeback Podcast. Until next time, I'll see you later.